Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cisternino here, getting ready for our Friday night Big Brother recap, which is coming up in just a bit. But first, I want to take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast, and those are friends over at True Car, because when you're making a big purchase, like buying a new car, you expect a transparent buying process, a process that gives you confidence to know you're getting a fair deal, which is more than you could ever expect in the Big Brother house or even in the Big Brother Canada house. Because to really understand the power of transparency, you've got to check out True Car and True Car's mobile app. Because with True Car, not only can you configure the car the way that you want, but also you can see what other people are paying for the same exact car you're looking for, down to the zip code, so you know what you can expect to pay for the car you want. Pretty transparent. And then, once you decide on the car you want, lock in that guaranteed savings, on average over $3,000 off MSRP. Then you'll be connected with a trusted True Car certified dealer that will honor your savings without negotiation and won't stab you in the back like these people in the Big Brother Canada house. I'm talking about you, Kevin. And so when you're ready for a new transparent car buying experience, save time, save money, never overpay. Download the True Car app today. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's the guy who's ready to podcast about some BBTV, Rob Cisternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome to our Friday Night Live Big Brother Canada recap. Yes, and we are here live. It's April 17th, and we're going to talk about what's going on Big Brother and ultimately on the Big Brother live feeds with an esteemed panel of Big Brother live feed reporters. Okay, so we're going to kick things off tonight. Of course, let me welcome who's on the show tonight. Let's start with a man who's making, I think this is appearance number three on the season here, is Alex Kidwell. Alex, how are you doing tonight?
Doing great, Rob. Yes, it is appearance number three for me. And I'd like to be one of the first people to, formally on a podcast, congratulate you on the podcast awards. You pulled quite the coup d'etat there yourself.
Yeah, a coup de Jeff, more like. I came away with a couple of awards, which I have here on the desk, that they're sort of translucent. I can podcast behind them, and you could still see the award and me at the same time. So maybe that's what we'll try to do. I've got this one. So yes, thanks again to everybody that voted for us. And speaking of two great things, here's our second live feed reporter for the night. Here's Mikey Dowd back with us.
So faux.
Yes, proper. Yes, how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing BBTV, as you mentioned, some feeds, just excited to get into it.
Okay, well, excited to get into it. Mikey's wearing an Expect the Unexpected t-shirt. Is that an official Big Brother merchandise?
It is official Big Brother merchandise. Okay. I wouldn't buy anything else.
Yes, very good. Okay, don't buy any of those knockoff Big Brother t-shirts. All right. So we are live here on robisawebsite.com. I'm back here in the studio for the first time here in a week, recording a Google Hangout. And so we're going to talk about everything going on in Big Brother Canada, talk about what is going on with, we have five people out of the house. One of them is going to go back in. We've got a new HOH. We've got nominees in play and a lot of stuff going on in Big Brother. And then later on tonight, we're going to watch 2 hours of Amazing Race and start that recap at 10:15 p.m. Eastern time. Okay. So let's just, where we stand right now. I know that this is live feed stuff. So, if we could do it not as spoil in no spoiler ways, has the person come back into the house that will come back into the house?
Well, they had the competition start and the house guests saw the beginning, but we haven't seen anybody officially come back yet.
So we are do we expect that person to be on the live feeds before Sunday night, or is that going to be a live show on Sunday night? Alex, do you know?
I think it may well be a live show thing, but there's no 100% confirmation either way, I don't think.
Because traditionally that's not a live show on Sunday night. So that would be interesting to see how exactly that's going to go. So we've got this backdrop of, we are going to have this competition. Of course, we had Johnny voted out, and it was a betrayal for Johnny to have people turn his back on him. And let's start with Johnny there. And let's start with Mikey. How sad are you to see Johnny go out of the house?
Honestly, I'm a little sad because I know he's a super fan. So that part of me really wants to see him in the house. But I mean, he did everything he really could to survive. It's just, you know, I mean, whatever. I'm not super bummed, but I wouldn't be too bad to see him come back either. So,
yeah. Alex, what was your take on Johnny? What's your eulogy pre potentially coming back into the house?
You know, I like Johnny. I think, you know, a lot of what Mikey said, I tend to want to root for the people who come in saying, you know, here I am, I'm a huge fan, I'm like you guys, I watch feeds. You know, it's in my nature to want to root for those guys, those people. But in general terms, I think, you know, Johnny really put himself in trouble just with that one vote for Neha. I mean, so early in the game, little ripples just will cause huge waves. And he just put himself in a spot where he needed to compete to win. And, you know, it was tough.
Did Johnny really create problems for himself when he ended up taking Kevin off the block? And what was that? During the week where Greg got blindsided? Was that a major problem for Johnny down the road here, Mikey?
Yeah, I think totally. It definitely, at the very least, made him cemented as a really big player that's willing to make big moves, especially against the side of the house that won HOH. So, you know, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, who else are they going to go for? I mean, he's a huge threat. He's clearly showed that he's against them, you know, so it's kind of tough to not attack someone like that.
But ultimately, did he make big moves, or was he just perceived as somebody who was going to make big moves?
I mean, taking Kevin down and, like, allowing the HOH to put someone like Greg on the block is kind of a big move, and he knew about it beforehand. So that also goes to show that he can be deceptive. So, I mean, I guess it wasn't, in theory, the biggest move, but considering he only saved his Kevy Webby. But, you know, it's still something that cements him as a player.
Yeah, I just felt like he got a lot of blood on his hands for that. And it really did. For somebody who wasn't really part of the Greg thing, you know, he ultimately was just seemingly trying to save Kevin, right? I mean, Alex, how complicit was he in the removal of Greg from the house?
Yeah, I mean, he was very involved in that plan, as far as I know. I mean, it was originally kind of Brittany and Sarah that really decided this was what they were going to do. But Johnny was in on the ground floor of that. And yeah, I think there was definitely elements to his game where he got more involved in other people's HOHs. And like you said, got unnecessary blood on his hands that kind of certainly didn't help all it did was further that impression that you were talking about with the veto, with the rogue vote against the house, that this is a wild card, a guy I can't depend on to do what I need him to do when I'm HOH.
Yeah, it just seemed like, though, that with the Greg vote, he got, you know, it seemed like he was the mastermind of that to Greg, where it seemed like, to me, he was like the third most important person in terms of getting that plan executed. And then as far as the Chop Shop was concerned, they looked at it like he really threw Greg under the bus. Is that fair, Alex?
I don't think it's really fair, you know, I mean, knowing what we know. But, you know, we see this all the time in Big Brother. You know, the perception of the house is sometimes it is what it is. And sometimes it's so powerful that, you know, no matter how much logic you throw at people, it's just not going to stick. I mean, you know, I remember back to like Big Brother 15 when, you know, people were talking about, you know, like, you know, Alyssa being related to Rachel and how crazy that was making everybody. Or then even when Zach was talking about possibly being related to Dr. Will and that not being true. But I mean, you know, a little subtle kind of thing like that will just spread like wildfire in there, and people are so paranoid and crazy that it just kind of cements in their head and they can't think about anything else.
Now, Mikey, it really seemed like to me that, you know, Johnny had this last ditch effort that I thought seemed like it might work, where Sarah explained this whole plan to him about how she was going to flip the house next week if she stayed in the house, and she was going to stab all these people in the back. And Johnny then had this information, and it looked like he had everything he needed to be able to flip things around and stay in the house. Ultimately, that's not what happened. Did people not believe Johnny, or did he not do an effective job of making that case?
I think he made an effective job, like, of pitching the case. It's just that it was almost like a little too late, whereas like the head of household already stated who his target was. and the rest of the house isn't going to want to stick their necks out to make a move and separate themselves from that side of the house before even the next HOH happens. And it's kind of intimidating to at least go against someone, whereas you can just make everybody happy on both sides if you just stick with the plan, or as Keith would say, and, you know, just keep it going.
Yeah. But I was surprised that he didn't, when they had his chance to give his speech of why he shouldn't be evicted, that he didn't say, look, Sarah has told me in no uncertain terms that if you keep her in the house, she will flip to the other side. Now, maybe the people on the other side of the house, like, oh, well, I vote to evict Johnny. I want to keep Sarah. But for the people that she is going to flip on, and again, this is with gummy bears and, you know, on the ground, and who knows if this is actually what she plans to do. Well, why not bring that up before you get evicted from the house, Alex?
Yeah, no, it's a fair point. I mean, I think, you know, we didn't see all the potential options explored there. And I think it would have been interesting to see just kind of like how much further that conversation could have gone. But I really loved what Johnny tried to do there at the end, especially. I mean, he saw the writing on the wall. He was astute enough to recognize his position in the house and then realized kind of his only play was to try to get Sarah to divulge information that she shouldn't be divulging to anyone. And, you know, I mean, it worked pretty well. I think he did just about everything he could as far as that road goes.
Now, Sarah survives this week. Do either of you guys feel like that she has a chance to make something happen? Or do you feel like that she will soon be joining Johnny on the outside of the house for now? And again, Johnny, a week from now, Johnny could be in the house and Sarah could not be in the house. So it could be a complete reversal. Alex, is this a possibility that Sarah could potentially be quickly also out the door?
Well, you know, without going into spoilers okay. about anything, I would say that Sarah's actually in a kind of an interesting position. I think, you know, once you've been used as a pawn, even if you were seen as like secondary threat that week, it almost, you know, does, first of all, assuming you can stay calm while you're a pawn, which Sarah did a decent job of doing, she didn't freak out on people. It kind of cements to people that you can be used and not blow up on them. So I think to some degree, coming off the block is good for you. I mean, if you can just go up and find a way down, you might quickly work your way back towards the back. And I think we might see bigger targets start to target each other. And someone like Sarah might be able to kind of like just get all quiet and mousy and kind of, you know, stay under the radar a couple weeks maybe.
Yeah, every season of Big Brother does need that person that's going to go up on the block every week. You know, in Big Brother Canada 2, it was Sabrina. You know, there was AJ in Big Brother Canada 1, who was the pawn star. You need that person. Mikey, could Sarah settle in and be the ultimate week-after-week pawn in Big Brother Canada 3?
It's possible, but I don't think that's the position that Sarah wants to go in. I mean, granted, she did do a decent job, but we also saw her crying quite a bit and kind of losing her mind. So I think if it's like continuously her being thrown on the block couldn't be very great for her. But I mean, it wouldn't be super terrible for people to just continuously minimize the threat that she is in the house.
Do you guys feel like she's a good player? I've gone back and forth about 3 or 4 times since the season started of no, she's way too flaky. And like, actually, she's kind of good. No, she's not good. Like, what's this? Maybe she's good. Do either of you guys feel like that she actually is one of the better players in the house?
Yeah, I love this. It's a great conversation to be had, I think, because I've had this same kind of, you know, back and forth in my head, too. I think it's a great example of someone who knows all the right moves, knows all the things that she should do. I mean, she is clearly a fan. She's clearly watched this show and she's clearly she's watched Feed. She knows how this game is played. I mean, she referenced Dr. Will. I mean, that's somebody who's been watching for a while. That being said, it's, you know, you've talked about this on Survivor. There's some things you just can't prepare for. And the emotional roller coaster is the biggest one, I think. And, you know, people are going to be people at the end of the day. If she's someone who kind of wears her heart on her sleeve, no matter how much she wants to be circuitry and wires, it's going to be tough.
Yeah. Mikey, what's your take on Sarah as a game player?
I do like Sarah. I think she has definite potential. And I mean, I think it all depends on how she plays it and if she trusts the right people, because if she can keep talking to the right people, I think she can go a distance and actually be someone who we could consider winning. But I mean, it also depends if she just takes like a passive role and lets certain people like mull over her game, then she's not going to have a chance. And like Alex said, she can be emotional sometimes. So the long-term game, it's tough to tell if that's going to continue or if she's going to, like, you know, just snap into it and, you know, just be completely game bought.
To me, I felt like she was also helped by the Big Brother task this week, where she had to, you know, do the thing where she was pretending to be operated on and the house had to try to save her. I thought it made her seem like very fun and at the center of everything going on in the house. Alex, did you feel like that helped, you know, make the case for keeping her this week?
That's an interesting point, Rob. That's not a debate we'd have on Big Brother US because you just don't see things like this there that often. This is really one of those elements of BBUK that, you know, they talk about being the bridge between the BBUK and the Big Brother US. And, you know, this kind of task really is reminiscent of the kind of thing they'll do on BBUK. To me, I think, you know, there's an argument to be made there whether or not this actually kind of helped her out. It certainly didn't hurt her, I think, to be the not only the face of this situation, but then, you know, when they ultimately get a reward for it, get to watch TV. I mean, she's kind of seen as like the one that brought that to everybody to a degree. So
yeah,
I think that's fair.
I mean, Johnny had his thing a couple of weeks ago, and certainly he probably could have used that being the person to win a party for the house this week, as opposed to where Sarah does get it this week, where she's the person who gets to, you know, work to give the house something good on a week that she's on the block. Mikey, do you think there's anything to this, or do you think it didn't impact anything?
I mean, I think that I don't want to come across too much as far as like, oh, Sarah is just so emotional. Because, I mean, they do love Sarah. Like, everybody seems to get along with her pretty well. It's tough, though. I mean, did she really do a lot in the task? I mean, she had to fake pass out and lay down. But mostly it was the house guest that earned the prize. And even then, it wasn't very challenging.
Yeah. I just felt like she was at the center of the attention where it was like, oh, my God, we got to save Sarah, that she's down. We have to, you know. And she had to, like, you know, she did a good job of acting and it was funny. So I felt like it made the house, you know, she was endearing to everybody in the house. I know it's a minor thing and if they really wanted to get rid of her, but I did feel like it was a point in her favor in the debate. Okay, so let's just talk about the other people in the house before we get to talking about who's going to come back into the five. I feel like we saw a lot this week about how JP and Zach have a million alliances in the house. Based on what we've seen on the TV show, does it seem, Mikey, like they are the two people that have the most power in the house?
I mean, for sure. Based off the TV show, we can see that, like we're getting confessionals from Jordan and Zach saying, like, you know, Newport is the real people in control of this house. And, like the Shield-esque, like, confession. So, I mean, like, we're definitely getting a sense that they have their hands in everybody's, like, proverbial pie. I don't know. But, you know, they definitely seem to be, like, they have, like, a decent amount of control in the house.
Yeah. Alex, the thing that always surprises me that, you know, people that allegedly have a secret alliance, how come nobody's ever wondering why Zach and JP are in the diary room together?
Yeah, you know, Rob, I think it's very interesting. I think I'm starting to get a lot of, and I like Jordan. I'm inclined to root for Jordan, of course. He's a listener. He's a fan. He's, you know, he's everything you would want if you're a, you know, an RHAP person and you're watching Big Brother. But I'm getting a lot of Arlie vibes. And this early in the game, that's terrifying for, you know, for a Jordan fan. I think he really has to worry about feeling too comfortable. I think that's going to be his Achilles heel, if anything.
Yeah. Now, where do you think the potential danger is coming from for a Jordan? Do you think it's a betrayal by Zach, or do you think that there is an insurgency coming that Zach and JP may not be aware of?
I think the problem is that this secret alliance of theirs is no longer secret. I think everyone is very aware that they're buddies in there. I think it's they've been too, you know, talking to game too often in the pantry and stuff for people not to have picked up on this to a degree. And I think the real danger for them, I mean, they seem okay. You know, they're close with Kevin. We saw the Bermuda Triangle and everything, but they've got to worry if Bruno, you know, that Bruno Bobby Godfrey contingent there manages to convince the Brittany Sarah too that they can take them farther than JP and Zach. That's a huge shift, and that should spell real trouble for Jordan and Zach.
Yeah, the demise of the Chop Shop may have been prematurely reported, Mikey, because Do you see a danger here that Bruno, based on what we saw on the show this week, does he have Newport figured out?
Yeah, I think based off what we saw, he definitely has them figured out. And he's even talking to other people about it. So it's like definitely a scary thing to think of. Like Alex said, if he can get together with the other side of the house and say, hey, look, why don't we team up? Because these people aren't sticking their necks out for you. We're the ones who are going to be taking all the hits. So, I mean, all it really takes is a conversation and for people to just say, like, put it all on the table. And then it could all come tumbling down.
Yeah. Let's talk about this competition to get one of these five people back in the house. Now, it's going to be some sort of endurance comp. Is that right, Mikey?
Yeah.
And do we know what it is? I know Arissa said it's a competition that you've never seen before on Big Brother Canada. Does that mean we've seen it on Big Brother US?
Potentially. I mean, there's a little bit of a feed leak as far as we could see a slight glimpse of the competition. And we know it's an endurance and it involves ropes. But other than that, there's not too much to go on.
All right. So let's just try to talk through who we think is going to come back into the house based on what we know. It's an endurance comp. I feel like while we might say, oh, if it's a competition, Greg has a good chance to do it. But traditionally, the big, strong guy does not fare well in the Big Brother endurance competition. Alex, is it fair to say that you think Greg will not be the person who comes back into the house?
I think your history of studying competition serves you well, Rob. I think not only were you spot on when it came to the shock collars, but yes. Here you go again. I think you've hit the nail on the head that muscle mass is not necessarily what you need for an endurance competition.
Yeah, so we'll see. Look, crazier things have happened, but I'm not so sure that it's going to be Greg. So which of these, either the women or Jonathan, do you think Alex has the best chance to win out in a competition like this?
You know, I mean, we didn't see her for long, but I mean, there was not one competition where Cindy with an S was, I mean, not seemingly a real endurance threat. I mean, I know Neha really wants to be there. I think the two of them have to be considered front runners.
Yeah, I know. I really feel like for Newport, I feel like the best thing that could happen to them is Neha coming back to the house, because Neha would just provide such effective cover for what the Newport or Fortress or, you know, Hexagon, whatever, like the younger group of people is doing in the house. Neha comes back in and it's going to be all out, you know, chop shop versus Neha and Sarah and Brittany part two. And that's really, I think, if you're a fan of Newport, I think that's the best thing that you could be hoping for. Mikey, do you agree or disagree?
I mean, I agree. I mean, it's tough. I mean, I don't know if we consider exit interviews spoiler territory. I don't know what the policy is there.
Well, Stephen Fishback would tell you exit interviews are not canon, but I don't believe they're spoiler territory, especially on Big Brother.
I mean, based off of what we've seen or heard from these people coming back, I think anybody that comes back is not really going to be great news for Newport. I think that these people are going to come in with the interest of just blowing up games, and the people that will definitely like take the biggest hit from their games being blown up is Newport. So, I mean, I guess Neha or Greg, because they're such big shields, would be their best option. But yeah, either way, it's going to be a tough road.
Yes. So, you know, good. I'm glad you brought this up, because we were wondered on this show, were the people that were voted out, would they be, you know, sort of sequestered and each on their own, or would they just throw them all in a house together? And we said we should hope that they're all sort of sequestered on their own. And I feel like traditionally on Big Brother US, when they've done this sort of thing, they separate everybody and there's no sort of talking outside the game. But for whatever reason on Big Brother Canada, they're not too worried about this. So the first four people who have been out of the game have been all comparing notes for this entire time, which is kind of crazy that somebody's going to come back into this game armed with a lot of information. So who do you think, Mikey, is that the information shared by the first four people? I don't know if Jonathan got to spend a lot of time with them. But so whoever comes back into the house, let's say it's one of these first four people, who has who's the person that will have potentially be in the worst position because of the information that was shared?
So the people who come back, who would be the most screwed in the house?
Yes.
I think that Zach would be the most screwed because earlier he's definitely got like the most like alliances going on. I think Big Brother Canada even put out an article or blog today saying that Zach's in like every alliance. So I think that no matter who comes back, Zach's going to have to do some work in order to just not be a target next week. But I don't know. By the way, I hate that they put all these people together because all of these people don't have any game anymore, theoretically. So there's nothing to stop them from blowing up their entire knowledge of what's happened, which, I don't know, to me isn't really Big Brother. I don't know. But you know, I'm from America, so I guess I don't.
Yeah, Alex, okay, two parts to this question. Who's the person that you think has the most to lose by one of these four people coming back in? And does it bug you that they put them all together?
Based on what I saw on the sideshow, based on kind of what we know from just the conversations that we've been given, you know, it sounds like Greg came in and disclosed the Chop Shop to the people who are out. And Neha knew, you know, thought that Zach was working with her side of the house. So you've got one person from each side saying that they thought they were with Zach, and that kind of tells everybody exactly where Zach's at. So I think Zach is absolutely, like Mikey said, I think Zach is in real trouble in most situations. I think the one person who could come back and actually want to work with them is Cindy. I think we may be sleeping on Cindy's ability to come back and just start making out with JP.
Whoa. Yeah, I was surprised Cindy was talking about how, like, hey, I may need to get that showmance with JP going again. Alex, do you think that potentially, and again, people are saying, hey, if it's an endurance competition, fair or unfair, Cindy is the competition beast. She's the one to watch out for. Do you think that if she comes back into the house, would that be a good thing or a bad thing for Jordan?
You know, actually, I don't know if Jordan would realize how good it is for him, but I think it's very good for him. I think you look at Jordan's core, and you've got Zach, who has a showmance.
You've got a good core.
Kevin, who has a showmance, and both with, you know, two of the girls that are considered the least strategic or some of the least strategic in the house. If he kind of tries to rope in Cindy to that and they have like a core of show, like a triangle of showmances, if you will, then, you know, I think, yeah, that's really good for Jordan. I don't necessarily think he realizes how close the numbers could be if people decided to talk. But I think that is a number he could use more readily than some of these people who have started to figure out his game.
A show muta triangle.
like beat me to the joke.
Yeah, wow. That would be something. But I wonder if maybe is the person that we're sleeping on potentially that could get back into the house, if it's some sort of endurance competition, if it involves holding ropes, would somebody with a long reach have an advantage? Could Risha potentially be the person that comes back into the house? And what would that look like, Mikey?
I honestly wouldn't even be able to tell you what it looks like because we've never seen her on the live feeds. Like, I mean, I suppose that she theoretically would stand the best chance coming back because she's like, she can just come in there and be like, yeah, I was already out for 5 weeks. No one's going to let me win. Like, she can just be like a newborn baby deer just thrown out onto the ice and just like, just try to find her footing. But I mean, I don't know. I think she could theoretically last a while. She does come back.
And don't you feel like she could sort of like come back into the house and fall in with like the Bruno, Bobby, Godfrey group? Don't you see her having a home there more so than with, you know, the Hexagon crowd in the house, Alex?
Yeah, maybe. I just don't know if I see her really finding her spot anywhere if she comes back. I have a hard time seeing how people are going to want to, you know, I mean, just based on what we saw, she seems like someone who was already very nervous about how to play the game and was really trying too hard almost is the impression that we got. And I just worry that having already been evicted once, that she might just double down on her mistake, that she might come in thinking that she really needs to push to, you know, get in with people and end up talking to everybody, having them see it and kind of revolving door situation. That's what I worry about with Risha more than anything. I think that's
okay. Well, I'm going to open this up. I want to talk about what's going on with the live feeds, and let me just grab the buzzer. All right. So let's talk about where we left off. And again, they've been doing so many cliffhangers on this Big Brother Canada. I mean, I feel like let's just get the HOH out there by the end of the episode and not have it cover. I mean, it's like 4 days between the Wednesday night show and Sunday night. Like, don't make us wait that long to give us what's going to happen in the next 5 minutes of action on the show. We could time this out better on the Wednesday Night Live show. So, okay, take us through it, Mikey. How did the HOH competition turn out?
Well, I agree with you completely in that it's a quiz competition. It's not very hard to show us the rest of the questions. So, I mean, it's kind of ridiculous that they didn't show it. But ultimately, what we did find out is that Zach wins the HOH and he ultimately comes into power. So, and yeah, there we go. It came down to Godfrey, Peely, and Zach, I believe.
Was it an intentional win for Zach? Did he try to win the HOH this time around?
Yes, he did try to win this time around. Him and Jordan both made a point to tell the live feeders that, like, look out, Newport's actually trying this time because, you know, they realize they have to somewhat pick a side at a certain point.
Okay, so this is it. Do you feel like this was too early, Mikey?
I don't think so, because as we saw from Bruno, he's considering targeting someone like Zach really soon. So the fact that he didn't target Zach at that double veto superpower, Zach should be thanking God that he's still even in the house. So I think that if he, you know, if he strikes first and is able to attack someone on that side, then it's probably better before him or Jordan gets attacked.
Alex, do you think that potentially Bruno could look back at this and see that this was a situation like Matt Hoffman with the platinum power of veto, where he had the chance to change the nominations and ultimately he gets Kathy out of the house there, a move that really is not a game changer when he had the chance to strike first at Enzo or any of those people that are going to be getting him out of the house within the next week or two?
I think this isn't quite a Kathy situation. Johnny is leaps and bounds better than Kathy was. He's got game. And we're at a stage in the house where there's more threats. Like, at that point, it was like the Brigade and, you know, the few that they had allowed to be dragged as long as they had dragged them to a degree. And, you know, I think we're so still early in the game. And it's really at a point where, you know, I mean, Bruno, you know, Johnny would probably come after Bruno if he didn't take him out, too. I think Bruno may regret not using that power. And, you know, as soon as, you know, this week, he could regret it. But, you know, he did with the information he had at his disposal then. I liked his confessional where he said, putting up Zach, you know, it loses me JP. It loses me Ashley. It loses me Kevin. And, you know, maybe Pilar. Like, he didn't even know necessarily how offended people would be if he tried to make the big move on Zach or even Kevin. So I think it's better to, you know, he knows Johnny's targeting him. You know, that's the safe play.
Yeah. Do you feel like Big Brother referring to Bruno as the Italian stallion is just Big Brother? Are they getting a little carried away with that?
Oh, you know, I mean, they're, you know, it's all about branding, right? It's all about making people iconic, making personalities with the short amount of time you have to give them. So we've got ourselves a Ginger Ninja. We've got an Italian Stallion. And yeah, we're creating characters.
Yeah, I mean, right. I know it rhymes, but is it really? I mean, is Bruno really the Italian Stallion?
Well, he can certainly handle
he's a handsome guy. I don't know. I think maybe we got a little carried away. But all right, so let's just talk about the nominations here for Zach. What is Zach and or Newport thinking with nominations this week?
Oh my God, they're thinking first off that their overall target should have been Bobby or Bruno, with the emphasis on Bruno because he's a better player. But their plan for this, I mean, if it works out, all right. So their plan ultimately is to use two pawns, Godfrey and JP. And yes, JP, who's in Newport, which it's in order to throw shade on the alliance so it doesn't appear as apparent and, you know, to make them seem like they're willing to gain trust with their alliance. But to me, it just seems like such an unnecessary risk for Jordan to be willing to go on the block. I mean, it just takes a few conversations. I really have a humongous problem with this. I don't know what to even say. I don't have words, Rob.
Yeah, you know, you make a lot of good points that it's like, oh, okay, well, if we put Jordan up on the block, then nobody will think that we have an alliance. But, you know, when somebody goes up on the block, then there's a lot of conversations that end up happening that maybe wouldn't have ended up happening. Like, every person in the house has to ask themselves, well, should we get rid of Jordan this week? Yeah. Like, maybe we should get rid of Jordan.
On top of that, there's someone new coming into the house. There's all of these things that can go wrong. It's just, it seems like an unnecessary risk. I mean, if it pays off and it works out, I'm sure I'll be changing my mind in the next time I'm talking about Big Brother. I'm going to say, oh, he's some sort of genius. But as of right now, as a super fan, it freaks me the hell out to see Jordan just potentially throwing his whole game out. He could go home pre-jury because he just wanted to look super cool to the live feeders. And I don't know. Maybe Alex has a different opinion, but I don't think it's super necessary.
Alex, what's your take on this?
No, I absolutely agree. This is not a good risk. I think this is a case where you look at, you've got to always examine, if you're going to take risks in the house, you got to think about, you know, risk versus reward. And I think what's the reward here, that like maybe people will stop thinking Zach and I are as close as we are. I mean, the problem is they already know. I don't think that cat is being put back in the bag. So ultimately, the reality is there is no reward to be gained here. I think it's all risk. There's no upside to this move. And he doesn't even recognize that the downside could be, you know, huge, because if somebody comes back, if that Brit, Sarah flop with like Willow, Godfrey, Bruno, Bobby, and whoever comes back, they don't have the majority.
Yeah. Now, do they play the veto yet, Mikey?
No, they haven't played the veto yet. I haven't. I don't even know if they've picked players yet, but that's possible. I'm not too sure.
Yeah, because couldn't you end up with somebody in the veto that doesn't want to use the veto and wants to keep the nominations what they are?
Well, potentially, but what they told the rest of the house, so Bruno's side of the house assumes that Kevin is the target and that these two pawns are just up there so that Kevin can ultimately be backdoored, whereas the rest of the house is aware that Bruno is most likely the target. I mean, some still think it's Bobby, but so as far as everyone's concerned, they should want to use the veto, I think. And I mean, unless some just outlier wins it, but I think right now everyone is probably going to use it if they, as far as they're aware. So,
okay. All right. And then somebody's coming into the house on Sunday and then they will also get to vote. Is this smart on Big Brother's part to have the person come into the house potentially after the veto has been used so that they at least get a couple days under them and can't just come right in and go right back out, Mikey?
Yeah, I think, I don't even know what the official rules are for them, if they get a free week or if they get like to just have the rest of this week. I think it's good because initially the first reaction for most people would just be like, send them right home. So maybe that's Big Brother's hopes that they'll have a couple days to jump in. And in fact, when we saw the images of the competition show up, everyone in the house actually made an agreement. And they said, final 11 deal, bro. We're going to the end. You know what I mean? So they all agreed that the first person, it's a revolving door policy, that no matter who comes back in, they all say, we're just sending them right back out.
Easier said than done, though. In a vacuum, sure, sure. But then that person comes in, it's like, hey, I'll work with you. I'll give you, you know, I'll keep you safe. What if they win HOH? So easier said than done. Let's bring in some questions here from the listeners of the podcast. And take a couple questions and then get some more reports on what's going on in the live feed. So let's start off here with this question from Sue Anthony, who says, should house guests be more aware of who's going into the diary room? If I was in the house and I saw JP and Zach entering the diary room together, I would raise a red flag on them. I brought this up earlier. Have we ever heard any Big Brother house guests ever talk about this when they see multiple people going in the diary room together? Alex, have you ever heard this before?
Yeah, I mean, I remember it being talked about, but I also remember sometimes pairs getting called in there for kind of wacky reasons too. So I don't know that you can necessarily correlate it with strategy. And like we saw, Monday, we saw Zach and Godfrey called in together to talk about, you know, I forget exactly what it was, but
it was,
you know,
the competition with the dog bones and whatnot.
Exactly. Right, right, right. So yeah, you had to say, just to make a pun, you know what I mean? So they're called in the diary room all day for all kinds of reasons. And I think, I mean, you could probably drive yourself crazy trying to think about why these two are going in there together. But I think it's hard to necessarily draw the line in pen once you hear that.
Should there be two diary rooms? And then you could have anybody called into there for any reason. And then maybe you think they're in the separate diary rooms. And then when you go in, you walk into the diary room in the hallway. It's like the DMV and it points to you, your name, and then which door you're supposed to go in. And that sometimes you go in there and there's another person in there. And sometimes you're not in there with anybody.
They have something kind of similar in the UK where they had like a next door next to the diary room where people could go into the diary room. So, I mean, I think it's kind of unnecessary, to be honest. I mean, most people, from what I see, they can just get called in randomly. Like, I saw Jordan and Johnny get called in at one point, and it got used on the show just for them to make some stupid joke about Johnny talking about a competition. I mean, I don't know if anyone really puts two and two together. I mean, I'm sure if it was like Chilltown-esque and every day or something like that, they're just walking in and making phone calls and whatnot. But,
yeah,
you know, all minimal right. benefit.
Alex, can you give us some other highlights from the feeds that we need to know about?
Sure. Yeah. So I guess let's see. We did get a little glimpse of the competition, as Mikey referred to earlier. It kind of came on their TV and the house guests were able to see. That's when they made this Final 11 deal. We're able to see what was going on. And it looked like, you know, from what was being said, it looked like Greg was already struggling on the rope and that Cindy and Neha were looking strong. So I think, you know, that's something that we can. You know, I don't think we're going to know the results of this thing until probably Sunday. But if we can read into anything there, I think, you know, that's what we have.
So are we expecting the live feeds to be down the entire weekend?
They popped back up today, you know, briefly. I don't know. I would think maybe. I think they want the Sunday live show to be really special. And I don't think they want to leak too much. Yeah. But we'll see. Anything could happen, really. They've been kind of so sporadic and so... You know, Arissa says they're going to be up tonight and they're not up that night. So any, you know.
Yeah. Mikey, have people been upset with the Big Brother Canada live feeds this season?
Yeah, I've been a little upset because, I mean, they cut pretty excessively. I mean, I saw the other day they cut when they just mentioned your name. Fortress was asking for a Rob Sesternino endorsement. They were begging for it a few times and then Big Brother put a stop to it and cut the feeds. But I just feel like, and I'm sure Brian Lynch agrees because I see him tweet all the time about it, that they cut a really excessively and sometimes when it's not even necessary. Like, we watched all of BBTV, got it trending in Canada. I didn't, I guess, get it trending in Canada. But we watched 5 hours of this to get a party that we didn't even get to see 1 minute of and we only saw 90 seconds of on the television show. So, I mean, I think a lot of people are a little frustrated for sure.
Yeah, do you think that it's because the Big Brother Canada live feeds, which are free, and because they're free, you can't really complain about them. Whereas in the U.S., yeah, you have to pay for the live feeds, but at least then you can complain and you could say, you know, you're not going to pay. Not that they listen too much to complaints, but at least there's some like accountability because you have to pay for it, that they have to give you what you're paying for, Alex. Well, what do you think of that? Is it better that you have to pay for live feeds?
I think if you would ask most people who watch live feeds most people at this point who are live feeders tend to watch both BBUS and BBCan. And I think you would, regardless of which country you live in, I think you would be willing to pay. If you're somebody who's, you know, committed to the live feeds, as many people are, I think you'd be willing to pay for more access as opposed to just get a free whatever they give you. And I think, you know, Rob, this is something you talked about at the Podcast Awards. You know, you don't want to alienate your base. You don't want to, I mean, the heartblood of Big Brother is the feeds watchers and the bloggers and the people who are, you know, updating constantly. And I think to tell those people that we don't care about you having any more information than the person who just watches the show three times a week is, I think, a mistake.
Always got to appeal to the base. It's all about that base, Alex.
Yes, it is.
Yes. All about that base. No casuals. That's right. Okay. Let's take another question. And let's go to John Clark, who says, what is Rish's problem with Willow? On the sideshow, she kept saying that she will target Willow if she returns to the house. Is it because does she want to make out with Sarah, Mikey? Is that what it is? Where'd that come from?
Well, first of all, that was crazy. It was like, that wasn't even part of Truth or Dare. I thought like it was going to be part of a game when they were talking about it, but it seemed like Willow just like went for it. I mean, I don't think Risha's too jealous. Maybe she is. I don't know. I don't know who Risha is. I haven't seen any videos of her apart from what they show me.
Yeah. Show me. That's the game changing app, I believe,
that,
also.
Yeah, it is a pretty epic thing from what the house guests tell
me. Game changer. But yeah, Willow is just, you know, pretty under the radar. And again, you know, that was my pick going into the season. I like where she's standing. She's not in really any danger, right, Mikey?
To a degree. I mean, people are definitely wary of her because she hasn't made any, like, I mean, she's still with the Chop Shop as far as that is still a thing. But, you know, the other side of the house is just barely keeping her involved in the strategic talk. So I think that she's not in a bad spot. Like, she's not anyone's number one target, but I don't think she's in a great spot either.
All right, let's keep going with some more questions here. Also, this is from Tim Forbes. Says, I may sound crazy, but is Godfrey actually playing one of the best games? Nobody's talking to him seriously at the moment, or nobody's taking him seriously, and he actually seems smarter than he lets on. He's also hilarious. Am I crazy, Alex? Is he crazy?
I don't think he's crazy. Godfrey is definitely smarter than he lets on, but he's not half as smart as he thinks he is.
He's a professor.
And that's his problem, right? He's the professor that's a psychology student.
That loves chicken feet.
It's hard to be a professor when you're still working on your degree, I think. And I think that's a microcosm of his, you know, problem in general. Is God has a bit of a God complex in there. He thinks he's capable of doing more than he actually has the stones to pull.
Yeah. I've been a little disappointed. I was very excited for him at the start of the season, and I haven't really seen much from him so far through, 28 days in the Big Brother house. I've been a little let down so far from Godfrey. This is from South Newton 1. This week looked like it could be an exciting week. Anyway, with a likely Bruno backdoor and the explosion of the Chop Shop, do you think that having a player return this week will ruin the excitement? Alex, what do you make of this?
I don't think it will ruin the excitement. I'm excited to see how it will change things. I think it's probably, you know, I don't necessarily know how it's going to be incorporated, whether or not that the person is going to be involved in the vote or whether or not they're going to wait until after the vote and then they come back in the house. I don't necessarily know exactly how it's going to play out. So I think it could be interesting. It could be a revolving door, but I think, you know, this is the twist they've thrown at us and at the players, and it'll just, you know, we'll see how they roll with the punches.
Mikey, after this, do you think we'll go a little bit without twists, or do you think that the twists will just keep on rolling on?
You know, someone brought up, I can't remember who it was on Twitter, but someone brought up that they've had more twists or just as many twists as the first two seasons in like the first 5 weeks of the show. And I got to tell you, Rob, I've had it up to here with the twists, and that's beyond where I previously thought I could go. I don't know. It just seems so excessive. Like you were saying before, that like it becomes not a twist to have twists every week. I mean, I know we've been told about this one for weeks in advance, but it just feels like, you know, we can't just get a normal week of Big Brother. Whereas like the only one we've had is where Cindy went home, and it seems a little unfortunate, but I mean, like I said, every time I mean, even for Big Brother Canada, because I love Big Brother Canada and the twist they provide, it just seems a little excessive to me.
I agree. It's too many twists. We need too many cooks of too many twists for Big Brother. So am I crazy, or did I hear recently that we're at the halfway point of Big Brother Canada 3? Alex, do you know how much longer there is to go here?
I did hear that. I mean, I know what it wraps like the first week of June, I believe. So
what's only the middle of April? So
yeah, we're not quite there.
Yeah, not quite there. Is it a shorter season than Big Brother Canada 2 was, or do we know if it's about the same?
I can't remember when that wrapped. I know it started like almost exactly a month sooner.
How many people are still in the house? That we started with 16 and 5 are gone, so there's 11 there right now?
There's 11. Someone's about to come back as another ghost, so it'll be another week at 11.
Okay. All right. We'll see. Yeah. All right, let's take a couple more questions here. This is from Leighton Jansen, who says, what do you prefer to see, returning players from the pre-jury or jury, and which do you think is more likely to stay in the game afterwards? If they had to bring somebody back, we had Gary come back in the jury phase. We have somebody come back this season in the pre-jury phase. Alex, what do you prefer?
I think that's a really good question. I think I prefer pre-jury phase. I think, you know, I mean, they were talking about it on the sideshow a little bit, but like Gary came back, you know, at like 5. I think that's too late for that kind of a twist. I like it here because, I mean, not only you actually have some room to socially maneuver potentially. Like a good player could come back, use this second chance, and maybe you don't win, because I think it'd be so hard to come back and win having been evicted once, but you have options. And, you know, the longer you're removed from the house, the longer they wait to do the revival, the more solidified the existing alliance has become. And I think this is kind of at a time where some people are just starting to see the writing on the wall and maybe are desperate for any number. And I think that could be good. So I kind of like this better. We'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Even on Survivor, when they've done Redemption Island, I feel like Redemption Island, if they did a Redemption Island that was just pre-merge, I wouldn't have a problem with it. And then somebody comes back after the merge. It's the post-merge Redemption Island where it's like, oh, here's Ozzy back at five. And if he just wins one challenge, he'll win the game, even though he's been voted out of the game for the last, you know, 15 days or 16 days or something like that. Just like Gary, where I think a lot of people were rooting for Gary and Big Brother Canada won, but if he comes back, that's a big asterisk next to his win. Where if somebody gets voted out in the first couple of weeks, like let's say hypothetically, like a Neha gets voted out early, but then she comes back into the house and then at final 11 and then goes on to win the game, I don't think that that's a huge asterisk next to her game or like a black mark on the record of Big Brother that somebody was voted out and then came back in because they played most of the game. It's when these people are out of the game for most of the game and then come back. All right, let's take one or two more questions. This is from a mile away. If Bruno decided to use a double veto this week to backdoor Zach, do you think it would have benefited his game more than his game negatively? All right, hindsight's 20/20, Mikey, but can we answer that question?
Yeah, I agree with you in this, that hindsight's 20/20. I mean, it's in Bruno's mind, I don't disagree with his decision process where he said he didn't want to make too many enemies. I mean, obviously, if he does end up going this week, he's going to wish he used it. I think if he had used it, he would have solidified the fact, even though I guess it is solidified. So, I mean, I don't think it really could have, like, he would have definitely made enemies, but if he goes home this week, he wouldn't have lost anything anyway. So I guess it's tough to say. So I don't disagree with this move, but yeah, it could have helped him.
Yeah, I do. Like more and more, I'm starting to think better to make the big, bold move too early than too late. And, you know, back in Survivor Kagyan, Tony gets rid of LJ at final nine. We're like, ah, that's too early. That's too early to make the big move like that to take out a big threat. But sometimes when you have an opportunity to take out these big threats, you kind of have to do it. Not to say that everybody should look to Tony for strategy advice, but you know, you're also damned if you do, damned if you don't. It's hard to say because, you know, then we'll say whatever you did, we'll say you did it wrong. All right, last question. Then from Scott J says, are we sleeping on Ashley? Whoa. Does she have more game than we think? I wanted to come on tonight and talk about how nondescript I think Ashley is in the Big Brother house. Real quick, let's start. Alex, what's your read on Ashley? Is she good? Is she just there?
She's a mix, I guess. She's not, you know, she's not a Pilar completely in that she has some, she has some semblance of what's going on around her. She has some ideas of who's working with who, and she's, you know, she's privy to a lot of the right conversations. That being said, I mean, she's still really, she's the youngest in the house, right? Or she's right there. She's like 21. And I think she is one of the few that really kind of shows her age a little bit. Like she really, a lot of the time doesn't seem like she has like the knowledge or the street smarts to really kind of hone in everything that would be needed to make a deep run, not just as Zach's kind of, you know, number two that he's willing to cast off towards the end.
Yeah. Mikey, what's your read on Ashley?
I agree to a certain extent in that I see her as someone who, if she was a super fan or knew more about the game, it would definitely help her. But I actually really like the spot she's in a way, because, I mean, she's definitely shielded by Zach in the showman's thing. She's in a lot of, like, good, a lot or powerful, like, spots to be in alliances, you know, with this diaper alliance that's going on. And, like, I think that we could see her for a long time. And if, like, she ends up around the end with someone like Pilar or something like that, we could feasibly see her winning. I mean, but like I said, it's tough to say when she's not like a super fan for her to be able to make the strong moves it's going to take down the line. So, I mean, I do like her spot, but I'm not completely on the Ashley train yet.
Okay. Not on the Ashley trainer. Okay. So let's go ahead and bring this train to a stop for tonight. We will be back on Tuesday. We've got a great show coming up this Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. Netta, according to Greg, the winner of Big Brother Canada 2, will be joining us. Yeah, the Neha of Big Brother Canada too will be joining us. And maybe at that point in time, Neha will be back in the house. So we'll be speaking with Netta this upcoming Tuesday. So we're looking forward to that. We'll recap everything going on with a person coming back into the house and get ready for next week's eviction coming up on Wednesday night. So that's going to be the Tuesday Big Brother recap. And then we'll be live again next Friday, again at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. All right, guys, thank you both so much. Let me give out the Twitter for both of you. Here's Alex. His Twitter is just Alex Kidwell. That's his name. Great job, Alex.
Thanks, Rob. You too. And we keep it simple over here.
Okay, very good. And then here is Mikey Dowd. That's Mikey _ Dowd, D-O-W-D. All right, great job again, Mikey.
Thank you very much, man.
All right. Thanks to Scott St. Pierre for pulling the questions. Thanks, everybody, who joined us live. We'll be back in just a little bit here tonight. We've got a two-hour amazing race coming up live on the East Coast, and then I'll be back at 10:15 p.m. Eastern. If you're not listening to this live, you can go out and check out that amazing race show in the archives on robinswebsite.com. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye.